It's time that we really remember the essence of what that motto, "Don't Tread on Me," means. It means you protect your liberties. You stand for freedom.
So Dennis Kucinich, in a strange bedfellows coalition with some new Tea Party members, have defeated, for the moment, the Patriot Act. Is there something that can bring progressive Democrats and Tea Party Republicans together? Did you think there would be anything? Well, it turns out it is opposition to big brother government as expressed in this national security measure. Here's what happened. House Republican leadership seems to have miscounted their votes when they tried to quickly reauthorize three controversial provisions of the Patriot Act last night. 26 of their members joined Congressman Kucinich and other Democrats to vote down the measure. So joining me now to talk about this meeting of the minds on the left and the right and what else might come of it is Julian Sanchez, a research fellow at the Cato Institute, the libertarian think tank who follows issues of privacy and technology. Julian Sanchez, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks much.
So let's review quickly these three controversial provisions of the Patriot Act, which are set to expire at the end of the month. What are they exactly?
Sure. There's roving wiretaps, which is basically just a provision that allows wiretaps issued by the secret FISA court to follow a target from phone line to phone line and account to account. This is actually something they've had investigators have had in the criminal context since the 80s. I don't think anyone actually has a problem with the idea that there would be roving wiretaps in anti-terror investigations in general. The problem is this provision doesn't require a target to be identified as the criminal side roving wiretap authorities do. But only described. So it creates this possibility of what have been called John Doe wiretaps, which are disturbingly like general warrants that name neither a target nor specify a phone line or an account to be tapped. There's this lone wolf provision, which is meant to allow lone wolves, that is, non-U.S. persons who are not actually members of a terror group or agents of a foreign power in the legal jargon, to be followed under, again, this FISA authority, this very secretive and very broad surveillance authority that's supposed to be reserved for foreign intelligence cases. That's a little troubling because there's, again, this traditional distinction between foreign intelligence defined as intelligence involving a foreign power and domestic national security investigations, and that's a constitutionally significant boundary. And so this blurs the line. It's not clear that it's necessary. It's never been used so far, and the historical reason that it ended up getting passed seems to have been a case where essentially the FBI claimed that it had lacked necessary powers when, in fact, their own errors had really been responsible for missing a lead. And finally, there's this Section 215 provision that allows them to get any tangible thing from a third party with a FISA court order. It's been often described as the library records provision because it was librarians who got most upset about it, I think somewhat misleadingly, because I don't know why in the modern age your library records are really that much more sensitive than a complete tally of all the websites you're looking at and the people you're emailing. But that was another section that was seen as maybe a little too broad because it used to be these orders required you to tell a judge specific and articulable facts showing that you were trying to get the records of someone who was believed to be a terrorist or an agent of a foreign power. And now you can get the records of anyone whose records are thought to be relevant to the investigation. And so, again, there's a very low bar there and allows investigators to sweep very broadly from very sensitive sources records pertaining to people who aren't even suspected of any kind of involvement in terrorism.
All right. Nicely summarized. So there are the three controversial provisions of the Patriot Act that have had civil libertarians up in arms, and now they've gone down to defeat, at least for the moment. We should point out that a majority of Republicans in the House supported the extension of these provisions. The vote was actually 277 to 148 in favor. It's just that the House leadership thought they had a supermajority and therefore could pass it without debate, right?
Right. This is a suspension of the rules, which is basically what they use when they want to pass a resolution declaring that puppies are wonderful or, you know, that a post office needs to be renamed. It's supposed to be for very uncontroversial bills, except last year when they did the same thing, another one-year reauthorization of these on the premise that they were going to take the intervening year to actually debate substantive reforms, it did, by, I think, over 300 votes, pass under a suspension.
So we know Dennis Kucinich, whose clip we played you know, would definitely be opposed to extending these provisions. Who are some people on the other side? Can you name some names? Were there particular Tea Party freshmen, for example, who, coming from their small government perspective, joined Kucinich and the Democrats?
There were a few, sure. The granddaddy, I suppose, of the Tea Party is Ron Paul, has been a longtime Republican opponent of the Patriot Act, and so he, of course, voted against it. There were a handful of freshmen. I think, let's see, there was Justin Amash and Chris Gibson, Tom Graves, Randy Holtgren. It's not actually that Tea Party heavy a list. If you look at the Republicans, there were 26, I think, who voted against reauthorization. I think there's maybe only about eight who are freshmen, who are sort of swept in on a Tea Party wave, a couple more who have been associated with the Tea Party. But a lot of the prominent Tea Party figures like Michelle Bachmann or Alan West actually voted for reauthorization. It is interesting to watch, though, some of these folks getting pushback from their own constituencies. I saw Jason Chaffetz from Utah had initially signaled that he wasn't sure which way he was going to vote. He ended up supporting the Patriot Act, but if you go over to his Facebook page, you'll find he's getting a substantial amount of flack for it.
So are there other potential areas of coalition building between the civil libertarian right and the civil libertarian left?
Yeah, I mean, this is really nothing new. I think people forget very quickly, maybe in part because it's the base that you find coming together on these against often a Washington consensus in favor of these surveillance measures, or at least a consensus in favor of being terrified of opposing them. But if you look back to the FISA Amendments Act of 2008, this was during the debate about Bush's warrantless wiretap program and retroactive immunity for the telecommunications companies that took part in it, there was a so-called Strange Bedfellows Coalition that was essentially a group of progressives centered around the progressive blog Fire Dog Lake, teaming up with a bunch of the people who had organized the Ron Paul money bombs to oppose that piece of legislation. Even way back to the original passage of the Patriot Act, you found folks like Grover Norquist at Americans for Tax Reform, sort of as arch-conservative a group as you could name, teaming up with the American Civil Liberties Union. So there is this, I think, long tradition, not always within the elected Republican Party establishment itself, but certainly across ideological boundaries, of people who are protective of civil liberties and skeptical of intrusive government.
Where's Obama, by the way, on these three controversial provisions of the Patriot Act?
Well, so he has always said that he thinks they should be renewed, and actually a lot of them, even civil libertarians, think should be renewed but need to be fixed, need to be retailored to more narrowly focus on terrorists and better protect civil liberties. And the public position has always been that they're nevertheless open to modifications. What you found happening during last year's reauthorization debate, though, was that the Justice Department, which is to say Obama's Justice Department, would publicly take no position on a series of proposed civil liberties reforms, and then you would find amendments essentially drafted by the Justice Department, laundered through Republicans like Jeff Sessions, and introduced, stripping away civil liberties protections from legislation sponsored by Democrats. So that was another kind of kumbaya, reaching across the aisle moment, I suppose, and, although less overt.
And you were unhappy with the vote to extend these provisions last year, but that at least meant that the next vote would be post-midterm elections, and Republicans might be freer to add protections to the bill, might add some of the protections that you were just referring to. And do you think that could be the result of yesterday's vote, or will they just bring it back around after some debate on a regular straight majority vote and it'll just sail through?
Well, the question there is whether they bring it back under a closed rule where amendments are not allowed, or whether they bring it back again for a straight majority vote, but you have potential for amendments to be introduced. Because a lot of the kinds of changes that folks have proposed are things that seem like they should be able to win a broad majority, have won bipartisan majorities in the past, have essentially won at least the tacit acceptance of the Justice Department. So if amendments are permitted on a revote, I think there's a good chance you could see some reform actually succeed.
Well, you know, the progressive civil libertarian salon writer Glenn Greenwald pointed out the irony of the White House demanding, and I'm quoting, that Egypt repeal its 30-year-old emergency law. It also demanded enactment of the House GOP's proposal to extend America's own emergency law, the Patriot Act, which is now 10 years old. Do you see the irony that Greenwald sees?
No, I absolutely agree. It's actually very disappointing to look back to what Obama said on the campaign trail about national security letters, another extremely controversial, probably the most controversial provision of the Patriot Act, which unfortunately doesn't sunset. One of the things Senator Pat Leahy had proposed doing was adding a sunset to national security letter authorities, which are essentially records demands that don't require a judge's approval, can be used to collect telecommunications records and financial records. And again, are issued by the tens of thousands every year, mostly for records of people who have no connection to terrorism at all. And you know, on the campaign trail, you had Obama saying, this is an example of the kind of thing that we shouldn't be doing in this country, that under my administration, there will be no more of these broad national security letters. And you've seen again and again Democrats floating proposals to narrow that authority and the administration shooting it down.
Julian Sanchez, research fellow at the Cato Institute, who follows issues of privacy and technology. The Patriot Act, the three controversial provisions of it, suspended for the moment after being defeated in the House, at least for now. Thank you very much, Julian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this hour, Lawrence Wright from The New Yorker on Scientology next. His article this week is built around the Oscar-winning Hollywood film director Paul Haggis, who was deep into Scientology and the organization before he left and started to talk about it. And then we'll have a Black History Month call-in on the civil rights heroes in your family. So think about who that might be from sometime in the past who you want to give a shout-out to, whether they lived during your lifetime or not. Get ready to call in and tell the stories in about 20 minutes of the civil rights heroes in your family. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.